Okay. Good morning, Chairman Anderson, members of the board, and particular welcome to our newest board members, Ms. Dean and Mr. Noren. My name is Matt St. John. I am the lead for our TMDL development unit here at the North Coast Regional Board. And today, I'm going to be giving you an update on the status of the development of TMDL in the Klamath River Basin.
Next slide, laser.
Look back. Okay. So I want to make it clear that this is an informational item. I won't be coming before you for another 15 months or so to actually hear this item for adoption of the TMDL. So this is really just to give you a status update on an overview of the Klamath River Basin, an overview of our TMDL development efforts, and the schedule that we're on, and to highlight some of the key technical results that we found in our analysis. The Klamath River Basin is nearly 13,000 square miles. It's at the most northern part of our region, originating in Oregon. So this is the California-Oregon state line. It's the largest watershed within our region and one of the largest watersheds in the state of California. As I mentioned, it's a bi-state watershed passing from Oregon into California. There's two U.S. EPA regions that have jurisdiction in this watershed. The EPA Region 10 oversees Oregon, and EPA Region 9 oversees California and other states. There are four tribal nations that have territory and land within the Klamath Basin. And I mention these things simply to acknowledge the complexity, both on a ecological as well as a social and political scale. The Klamath River, one of the primary interesting aspects of it is that there are four hydroelectric facilities within the basin. Two in the state of Oregon, Keno Dam and J.C. Boyle Dam, and then two facilities in California, COPCO 1 and 2, and Iron Gate Dam. So what this means is we have a river system that starts at the outlet of Upper Klamath Lake here, flows into what's a short reach known as the Link River, and then into what is referred to commonly as the Klamath River. And then with the presence of these hydroelectric facilities, as well as irrigation control structures, we go from a river system to a reservoir, back to a river, to reservoirs, river, reservoir, back to river, and ultimately to the estuary before the Klamath River flows into the Pacific Ocean. The headwaters of the river, as I mentioned, is this large and shallow lake called Upper Klamath Lake. And Upper Klamath Lake is a naturally eutrophic lake. There's evidence of very extensive algal blooms that occur today, but evidence that they have occurred for many, many, many years, way before humans had inhabited this watershed. And the reason for, one of the primary reasons for this eutrophic status, eutrophic means very productive, is because the basin and the upper basin is largely in volcanic soils, and so volcanic soils have high phosphorus concentrations in the soil naturally through natural erosion and solubility properties. These nutrients are entering Upper Klamath Lake and become the headwaters of the system. The result of this is that the Klamath Basin is sometimes referred to as an upside-down watershed, in that the majority of the loading is originating in the upper basin, And as it flows down into California and ultimately out to the Pacific Ocean, it is fed by some very large river systems in California, which, relatively speaking, are a lot cleaner. They're largely forested and do not have that same geology, and therefore they do not have the same high phosphorus concentrations. So you actually have diluting that's going on as the Klamath River moves downstream, both in the flows that are coming in as well as the relatively low nutrient concentrations. With that said, there are significant non-point sources of pollution that are contributing to water quality in the basin. And these include agricultural as well as forestry-related land use practices. And this map just shows by color these different land uses and vegetation types. The magenta color indicates areas within the basin where there's irrigated agriculture. The yellow indicates grassland and pasture and areas that are used for cattle grazing. And then the green indicates, of course, forested land. And much of the forested land is under the ownership of the U.S. Forest Service, as well as some checkerboard of private ownership. There are five permitted point sources that discharge to the Klamath River. Four of those are shown on this map and are in the state of Oregon. Two sewage treatment plants, wastewater treatment facilities within the city of Klamath Falls, shown here, as well as two industrial wastewater facilities, which are actually wood processing facilities. And then not shown on the map, but indicated here, is one permitted facility within the state of California, which is at the Iron Gate Hatchery, which is a fish hatchery that was installed to mitigate for the loss of migration when Iron Gate Dam was installed. The Klamath Basin is the home spawning grounds to a once vital tribal commercial and sport fishing industry. The Klamath was one of the most productive salmonid fisheries historically, and over the last 100-plus years has experienced significant declines in the salmonid fish populations. This led in 1986 to the establishment by U.S. Congress of the Klamath Act. And it was a recognition of the fact that this significant decline in the fisheries was an indicator of the ecological impacts that the Klamath Basin was facing. And what this led to is both in the state of California and the state of Oregon. I meant to have all those arrows while I was talking. I apologize. Both states determining that beneficial uses of the Klamath River were not being fully supported, and primarily these were the beneficial uses associated with the fishery population. And based on the Federal Clean Water Act requirements of updating our impaired water bodies list, known as the 303D list, both the states of Oregon and California listed the Klamath River on this impaired water bodies list for the various pollutants shown here. In the state of California, the Klamath River is listed for temperature, organic enrichment and low dissolved oxygen, nutrients, and in 2006 was listed for sediment just in the downstream reach, downstream of where the confluence of the Trinity River. This is the Trinity River entering the Klamath River. So the sediment listing just applies to this part of the watershed. And in March of this year, US EPA retroactively added microcystin as a pollutant or as an impairment to the two reservoirs in California, Iron Gate Reservoir and COPCO 1 and 2 reservoirs. Microcystin is a toxin that's produced by a blue-green algae known as Microcystis. So there are the total of these five listed parameters of impairment in the Klamath River, but we are currently working specifically on developing TMDLs to address the three parameters shown here: temperature, low dissolved oxygen, and nutrient enrichment. The reason that we're working on these three is based on a lawsuit against US EPA that led to a consent decree and a schedule that laid out the time frame by which both EPA and agreement with the state of California to develop TMDLs in the North Coast region. And the Klamath River is the last of these TMDLs that we are developing pursuant to this consent decree. Because the Klamath River is listed in both states, because of the complexity of the water quality parameters, it became very clear as we initiated the work on these TMDLs that we needed to be working in concert with the state of Oregon. And so the US EPA Region 9 and US EPA Region 10 supported the idea and was very instrumental in the establishment of a memorandum of agreement between both EPA regions, the Regional Water Board, and Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And this memorandum of agreement lays out essentially a structure of agreement that we will be working together in the development of these TMDLs. So what this means is that we're having a common analysis to support the development of the TMDLs. Ultimately, the decisions related to the California Klamath TMDL is fully in the authority of the state of California and you. In other words, the state of Oregon does not have any voting power on whether or not our TMDL gets approved or not. But the analysis that underscores what we will ultimately recommend to you is a joint analysis. We are sharing resources, both in terms of staff time as well as financial resources. And I should say that EPA Region 9 and California North Coast Regional Board have contributed the lion's share of the funding for this work, though EPA Region 10 has certainly contributed as well. And we are working with those funding availability with assistance from a contractor who's working for US EPA. This contractor is Tetra Tech. So under the terms of this consent decree, EPA is obliged to adopt TMDL for the Klamath River by December 2010. So I'm asking you to look at the bottom row. This is our end game. We've already gone through an extension of this consent decree. Originally, we were scheduled to complete it by December of 2007, but reached an agreement with the plaintiffs and the court to complete by December 2010. So what this means is that we are, while that is 2.5 years away, a little less, we are really rounding third from the standpoint of the development, third base from the standpoint of developing this TMDL because of the many required steps to get a TMDL adopted in the state of California. So as I mentioned at the beginning, when the time that you will be hearing this item for adoption is in late fall, early winter of next calendar year. And then after the regional board adoption, it has to go to state board for adoption, and then approval by Office of Administrative Law. And hopefully, US EPA will approve at that same time, by September 2010. If, for some reason, the state of California does not adopt a TMDL, then EPA has just a few months to establish a TMDL. That is, we certainly hope we don't get to that point. The implication would be that the TMDL would not include an implementation plan. It would not be incorporated into our basin plan as a regulatory document. It would just be a technical TMDL with essentially no regulatory backing behind the analysis. Looking to where we are today, we will be providing updates to you in addition to today's meeting at two upcoming board meetings in September and October. We are finishing an administrative draft of the TMDL literally early next week for review by US EPA and federal wildlife agencies as well as some other resource management agencies. We will then be receiving comments from this administrative draft review, making revisions, and going out to the legislatively required peer review. That will happen in the end of this calendar year. We will get back comments from our peer reviewers and go out to a 90-day public review period next spring. It's during that time that we will hold a board workshop and have additional workshops throughout our in other places in our region to present the full TMDL staff report and the action plan that will be incorporated into the basin plan. We have completed and made publicly available the first two chapters of the Klamath River TMDL, and these are currently on our website and available for public review. We did this on the Shasta River TMDL, and it proved useful to vet kind of this background information about the TMDL early. What Chapter 1 is it's the watershed overview, a description of the watershed and its setting, more detail from the first few slides that I provided here. And then Chapter 2 is what we call the problem statement. It's essentially our analysis and assessment that confirms that the Klamath River is an impaired water body. It's at that step after confirmation that it's impaired that says, okay, the next step is the development of a TMDL. So we're providing these documents for public review. We're asking for input prior to the time that we go out to the formal public review so that we can incorporate any comments that we get and not have to respond to those, hopefully, through the public during the formal public review period. So I want it to be clear to the board members and members in the audience that these documents are on our website at the URL noticed here. So I'm giving you just a little hint of the some of our results of our analysis. And this, the purpose of this presentation was not to go into our analytic approach, but to give you the highlights that I've mentioned so far. But what I am presenting here is the TMDL loading allocations that we are going to be putting at the California-Oregon state line. So essentially, these are the loading reductions that we, the state of California, are saying Oregon needs to meet in order to meet water quality standards. Oregon is well aware of this, and what we're looking at is on the order of, 80% reductions in total phosphorus, 60% reductions in total nitrogen, and almost 50% reductions in organic matter measured as CBOD, or carbonaceous oxygen demand. This is a big deal. There's a lot of nutrient reduction and organic matter reduction that needs to happen in the upper parts of the watershed in order to meet California state water quality standards. However, the state of Oregon's not the only one that's feeling the pain. The Shasta River, which we've already completed a TMDL for, is facing, under its current TMDL, already approved, reductions of in the order of 72% reduction for total phosphorus, 60% reductions for total nitrogen, and about 20% reductions for organic matter. I want to make it clear, these are reductions that have already been approved, are already part of the existing TMDL for the Shasta River. Our current analysis for the Klamath River found that those reductions, which were set to meet Shasta River water quality standards, are sufficient and needed to meet Klamath River water quality standards. There's nothing new here. In addition to these nutrient-based and organic matter-based loading reductions, there are temperature loading reductions, and we'll be going into more detail on those at future board hearings, as well as reductions that are being asked of the owner and operator of the four hydroelectric facilities, known as the owner as PacifiCorp. And we'll go into those details at a later meeting. And those will be, these other later meetings will be at the September and October board meetings. And it's at that time that we'll provide a little bit more technical detail on some of our technical analysis. We will have at that point received the feedback on our administrative draft from our reviewers, and we'll give you feedback on the comments that we've heard, and hopefully have some of those reviewers present here to give comments directly to you, and seek input at those meetings from the board as well as the public. So here's the contact information for myself and Holly Lumberg, who's the supervisor in our Basin Planning Unit and is the lead overseeing the development of the implementation plan portion of the TMDL. And also identified here is Steve Kirk, who is essentially my counterpart for the state of Oregon in developing the Klamath River TMDLs. So with that, I've presented an overview. Would welcome any questions and happy to respond.
Thank you, Matt. Board member questions? Mr. Massey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt, first of all, let me thank you for one of the finest presentations I think we've seen. This is outstanding. It is concise, outlines the problem, and it gives us about as much detail as I think we can gulp in. A couple of questions. One, are there any groups that are contesting us, I mean, seriously, in terms of this process?
No. We've had, by the process, you mean the process for developing a TMDL and our engagement with various stakeholders. At this point, nobody is contesting it. Will it be controversial? Mm-hmm. You betcha.
72% reduction in phosphorus, this is going to be a big lump. How are we doing with the Shasta?
Good question, and I think that there's David Leland, I believe, is in the audience, and we can certainly, I mean, there have been updates by the implementing staff to the board. Would you like to have?
Just in terms of clearly Shasta's ahead of the main stem, and it's going to have the same sorts of problems, are we developing groups that are now going to oppose us?
Why don't we just let David give an update? We're deep into implementation of the Shasta TMDL, and Dave is serving as sort of the coordinative lead between the TMDL group and the non-point source unit and the timber group, all of whom will have pieces. So, David, do you want to maybe just give us a quick update?
We updated you in April on the status of the Shasta TMDL, and things have continued along the track that that we had described in April, and with continued successes in making progress on the Shasta TMDL, we're about to send out the landowner letter. That's probably the most significant event, and have meetings scheduled in the watershed in April, in the third week, the week of the 18th of April. Of August, I'm sorry. Thank you. That's right. August. So things are going very well, and making. I think it's all around. It's a success story. We've got great cooperation. The RCD is working very well with us. There are a number of other groups up there who are very excited about what's going on. The Nature Conservancy is active and is working well with the community as well. So I think we're doing really well on that. And just wanted to reinforce what Matt was saying, that the reductions that he was talking about in the Shasta are the ones that are already in the TMDL that we're already working on. So, and the one of the projects that I find particularly intriguing, and I'm looking forward to learning more specifics about when the time comes, and we're about to get a report on initial monitoring, is the tailwater reduction projects. That's where a lot of this nutrient reduction is going to come from, and we've helped that process along with a grant to identify what the patterns of tailwater generation are, what the geography of tailwater generation is, and what the water quality, what the chemistry of that tailwater is. And there is a lot of exciting information that's coming out of that it will provide years and years and years of opportunities for water quality improvement by just taking that information and converting it into something on the ground.
Thank you.
Heidi?
My question, is this on?
Yep.
My question.
Get closer to it.
I know, I'm trying to think. My question was, when we look at these state line annual loads and the reduction rates and then on down to the Shasta, by mentioning the tailwater, you answered part of my question already, but I was wondering, in regards to the state line annual loads, are there specific points that we can look to remove a big part of the reduction? I mean, make the reduction happen?
There's a couple big places. The first is Upper Klamath Lake, which I can't remember in percentage, but it's somewhere near about 70% of the loading that passes to state line is coming from Upper Klamath Lake. And Upper Klamath Lake, while I mentioned in my initial slides, is a naturally eutrophic river, I mean water body, is now a what we call a hyper-eutrophic. And there's unequivocal evidence that human-caused factors have resulted in this hyper-eutrophication. So that's one source that can be controlled. In addition, there's the discharge from the Klamath Project, which is the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's irrigation project mostly in the Lost River subbasin, which exists in both Oregon and California. And the Lost River subbasin historically only discharged to the Klamath River in very extreme hydrologic years. It was actually a closed subbasin. But now through engineering, the water from the river, which is now primarily used as an irrigation conveyance system, and then that water from the Lost River is actually discharged to the Klamath River in Oregon through what's known as the Klamath Straits drain. There is a tremendous potential bang for your buck if we can treat that water before, in some way, before it enters back into the Klamath River. In addition, I would say that the impoundments on the Klamath River that are used for these hydroelectric facilities, again, I purposely wasn't going into a lot of detail yet on those, but they are certainly contributing to the impairment of the river, both in terms of temperature as well as in terms of nutrient enhancement. And so there are engineering solutions that could control those sources from those facilities if those facilities remain in place. And I say that just those facilities, as you probably have heard and I think we have covered in previous updates, are currently undergoing relicensing through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And that's a whole parallel process that's going on.
So it's safe for me to understand that there definitely are big pockets that we can dip into, or big areas that we can work on that will give us the majority of the bang for our buck that we're looking here in for reduction.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Mike?
Yeah, so I have a little better understanding. Your state line annual loads, when you're looking at reducing the TP 83%, and then you look at the one below that where we're going to reduce it 72%. That's out toward the end where it empties into the ocean. Or here, let me rephrase that. 83.6%. Now our 72%, that is based on the reduction of 83.6%. Those are two different ones, right?
Those are two different water bodies. The 72% is the reduction that's needed from the Shasta River, and I'll show a map in a second here. That's the reduction from what the Shasta River contributes to the Klamath River.
I see where I made my mistake.
Okay.
Jeff?
One more, Matt. Sorry to don't keep beating on the state line thing here, but just kind of in parallel with what Heidi was saying, with what the reductions are at state lines, so what we're requiring crossing state line into California, how are those reductions, are those reductions consistent and on target with what Oregon is setting for their criteria? Yes. So it's not radically out of phase that
no.
they're going to, okay.
It's a great question, and these type of reductions are not only driven by meeting California water quality standards, but they're also driven by meeting Oregon's water quality standards within the state of Oregon. So they need to do these reductions to meet their own TMDL.
Right, right.
Because we, as the California entity, we are not setting allocations to their sources that their TMDL will set. They will have allocations to these point source discharges, to the Lost River Diversion Channel. We're just expressing it as one gross allocation. Good, great
Thanks.
Question.
Mr. Chair.
David.
And again, though, so I understand Oregon's TMDL, Matt, lands the same time as our TMDL. Is that correct? Are they under that same consent decree?
Oregon is not working under the terms of this consent decree. So they are on a separate timeline. And Oregon has a goal of having US EPA approve their TMDL by winter of next calendar year, February 2009.
So in essence, they're in front of us.
They are in front of us.
At the same time? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, just to the reason for that is that in the state of Oregon, they don't have a board that approves their TMDLs. It's just the agency that develops it approves it. And they also don't have they don't have a state board as we do. So they just simply don't have the same process that we do.
Well, it strikes me, too, within that same vein, is that one of the biggest landowners in this basin is National Forest, correct? Forest Service?
That is correct.
So you've got that Bureau of Reclamation, State of Oregon, tribes. This is a pretty complicated mix. From the standpoint of what you've laid out on web page already, and your 2.5 years sounds like a long time from now, but it really isn't. Given that you have a consent decree, do you have any feel for or have feedback from those big players about their stakeholder buy-in to this process? Do they know that they have potentially an 83% total reduction in total phosphorus coming down the pike?
We are having a series of meetings next week, meeting with all of the key stakeholders, including the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, the Klamath Water Users Association, PacifiCorps, and that is when they will be hearing this information. So you're hearing it first, and they will be hearing it next week.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you very much.
John?
I just wanted to indicate when we set the sediment priorities, that would encompass the U.S. Forest Service, and I think it can dovetail nicely with this process. I wanted to give encouragement to get the letter out to the Shasta landowners, because I think the concept was clear communication is better than rumor communication, and I'm getting nothing but good reports on our staff communications there, but I just think that's wise to keep that moving. And then, do you know whether the Nature Conservancy, how far along they are in funding the Shasta Water Bank?
I'm not sure I'm not aware of their role in funding the Shasta Water Bank, or the Water Trust, actually. The RCD has been involved in that, and the Nature Conservancy has an interest in that, but I'm not aware that they're providing funding for it.
I just had heard the Resource Conservation District, and they were in negotiations, that's all. So.
Yeah, no, there is a process that is underway, and that process is still active to develop a water trust up there. TNC is very interested in participating in that and is actively supporting the process. I'm just not aware of any monetary support that they're giving, but they're definitely on board with the whole process, as are we.
Matt, I have a question on the state line loads. Are we allowed to assume that those loads are achieved and basically 124,000 pounds just pass on through and we don't have to remove some of that? Or how does that? You had made comment that the river essentially is upside down, cleans up as it goes further towards the ocean. Are we on the hook for further reducing the numbers that come out of Oregon, or are we allowed just to say, well, that's theirs and it goes to the sea?
I have to admit, I'm not positive I'm fully capturing the question. As I think I understand, you're saying, is there a potential that we could find that we need larger reductions in this? Is that what you're asking?
You know, basically, are we held harmless to their, you know, I mean, these are steep reductions. Are we allowed to assume that they're achieved and then it goes forward, or?
These are just numbers based on an analysis that we say is what's needed to meet standards. The only way this is going to happen is if these TMDLs are implemented, and implementation takes time. So I would say there's certainly no assurances. We are one of the primary implementation vehicles is that we're considering the development and talking with Oregon DEQ and EPA Regions 9 and 10 to have another MOA specific to implementation. So these are ongoing discussions, but that would lay a framework for working cooperatively together to make this happen.
I think what he's asking, Matt, or I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Mr. Chair, but if we get the Oregon state line reduced by 83.6%, does that mean that we don't have to clean anything up in the state of California because then it can all go to the ocean? Or are we then going to start cleaning that 124,722 further in the main stem, as well as have essentially nothing coming in from Shasta?
That was my question, basically, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. I'm just giving you a little highlight here, and we're all there's load reductions that are being required not only for the state of Oregon, what passes through state line, but also in California. The largest nutrient and organic matter reductions are certainly in the state of Oregon and the Shasta River watershed. But there are other reductions that will happen throughout the watershed in California that are going to be expressed as allocations in the TMDL. And particularly, as I alluded to, the operators of the hydroelectric facilities are looking at allocations as well.
All right. We look forward to it. There are folks here from US EPA. Do you want to? I don't have any cards, but we entertain, make any comments, observations.
Hi, good morning. I am Gail Louie, and I'm with EPA in San Francisco, and Sue Keitel is also here in the audience. We've been working very closely with your staff on these TMDLs, and just want to commend your staff and your executive officer for the fine work you guys are doing, and we're glad to support it and hope that we don't end up having to do a federal TMDL and won't be back here in a couple of years. But I think it's a complex situation, and I'm glad that to see that you guys are engaged and glad that the information is flowing. So, and also, thank you very much for that very nice resolution for Palma. That was really quite eloquent and quite moving. So, thank you.
All right. Very good. We are anxiously await the next installment in September.
We're going to go on. Item 11. I know it's passed.